The content of this program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. And for the next half hour, I shall be reading to you from National Geographic, The Washington Post, and something called Blum's Planters and Farmers Almanac, all a part of today's Armchair Traveler. Please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. And today on Armchair Traveler, we attempt to carry on a yearly tradition. As some of you who are regular listeners may recall, when we near Halloween or October 31st, we like to feature travel stories that are flavored with spookiness and other supernatural things. Well, this year, we're going to start with a well-known mountain range in western North Carolina. We then visit a haunted hotel, and we wind up our journey with some snapshots of haunted lighthouses. And there might be some extras, too, so just stand by. Writer Olivia Campbell is going to start our journey with haunted Appalachia. These ancient mountains witnessed the birth of a man and monster, and her story appeared in the October 2023 issue of National Geographic. So let's begin our spooky journey today, okay? And it has a picture here that says, clouds roll over the tops of trees of a mountain range. That's certainly an interesting picture. Well, from the Mothman, Wampus Cat, and Raven Mocker to the Grafton and Flatwoods monsters, the Appalachians are teeming with supernatural creatures. TikTok is flooded with stories of hashtag haunted Appalachia, and many people believe the high rate of mysterious phenomena in the Appalachian Mountains, a 2,000-mile range that spans Newfoundland to northern Alabama, is due to their geological age. How old, do you ask? Well, older than Saturn's rings, older than the ozone layer, older than sexually reproducing organisms. Old enough to remember when days on Earth were shorter than 24 hours. The rocks at the core of the Appalachians formed nearly 1.2 billion years ago, when all the continents were still one. About 750 million years ago, the supercontinent began to thin and pull apart like warm taffy because of expansion of the continental crust. Sandra H.B. Clark, U.S. Geological Survey Research Geology, eloquently explained in her story of the birth of the Southern Appalachian Mountains. When the continents eventually broke off, a deep basin from the Carolinas to Georgia filled with seawater. Now, the rest of the mountain range shoved off to become the Scottish Highlands. Over the millions of years that followed, rivers built up the basin floor with sediments, while volcanoes belched eruptions nearby. Then the continents decided to change direction, sending them slamming into and over the top of each other, bringing earthquakes and molten rock eruptions in their wake. It was an intense, volatile time, but it created fantastically unique mountain range that, while crop averse topographically, boasts unparalleled ecological diversity. Appalachian ecologist Elizabeth A. Byer says this topography creates a vast number of ecological niches with differing elevation, slope, aspect, temperatures, and rainfall. Now, these niches have been slowly filled with species that are particularly adapted to their environment, she says. Now, in some areas, species have tens of millions of years to migrate and specialize, filling each ecological niche completely, she adds. Byers, principal scientist at Appalachian Ecology, an environmental consulting firm, notes that you can walk in the woods and wetlands and find unusual species of rare beauty or fascination. What could be more exciting than happening upon a carnivorous round-leafed sundew with its red tentacles glistening with glue-like nectar? Or finding the little holes where a northern flying squirrel has come down from the trees to dig false truffles the night before? One of the reasons the region is so rife with supernatural legends is not only that the mountains are old, but it's also that they continue to appear old, because much of Appalachia has remained uninhabited by humans. Much of that ancient biodiversity is still with us, Byers explains. The gorgeous habitats that haven't yet been erased by civilization range from dark, misty red spruce forest to layered oak forest, from silver maple swamps along the major rivers to cotton grass fens on the high plateaus. Might monsters be amongst this ancient species still filling these niches? It's fun to imagine the possibilities. Often, the possibilities noisily present themselves. These ancient mountains are a perfect breeding ground for all manner of spooky sensations, since their age is almost palpable, says Ursula Vernon, a USA Today bestselling author based in North Carolina, whose spine-tingling horror novels, written under the pseudonym T. Kingfisher, are largely based in the Appalachians. Their great age gives the mountains this worn, twisty quality, full of dark hollows and deep folds in the earth, observes Vernon. There are places you can stand and feel the age of the mountains pressing down on you like a weight. The density of legends is related to the density of nature in the area that's unlike anything most of us are used to. In Appalachia, it's easy to get overwhelmed by the grandeur of nature because of the intense saturation of natural landscapes, says renowned folklorist Carl Lindahl of the University of Houston. Lindahl describes the research of Pulitzer Prize-winning social psychiatrist Robert Coles, where he asked children to draw what home would look like. Over and over again, among the Appalachians, and only the Appalachians, home was the natural landscape, says Lindahl. Kids drew houses that were absolutely dwarfed by nature. Some even drew the mountains and forest, underscoring the senses in the Appalachians that nature is incredibly imposing. There is something in a landscape like that which humbles you and intimates that to you that there's something very big out there, and this thing has an awful lot of power, says Lindahl. Nature is the gateway to the supernatural. You can't have the supernatural without the natural. Mountain folklore. Myths and legends have long been a way to explain the otherwise unexplainable in the natural world. Locations become active participants in the creation of supernatural settings once they are imbued with legends. Now, Iceland has a name for these areas, and I'm going to try this word. I don't speak Icelandic naturally. It's Alagabatur, which means enchanted spots. While the Appalachian Mountains significantly predate the concept of language, as long as there have been people there, there have been stories. Judicullah's Rock is a 240-square-foot soapstone boulder in the Appalachians that's covered in over 1,500 petroglyphs, the oldest of which dates to roughly 4,000 years ago. According to Cherokee mythology, the area is the domain of the Lord of Game, a giant who haunts the land, protecting it from overhunting. As this myth illustrates, stories sometimes have a deeper purpose, are meant for more than just an exhilarating jolt of fear. Leslie J. Anderson, an Ohio-based horror author and poet who co-hosts the podcast The Crypto Naturalist with her husband Jared, believes spooky tales are a way to warn people about danger in a way they will listen to. I don't want to tell my small child he can't play by the cliff because he might fall to a horrible death, but we can both laugh about the gremlins who might bite his toes by the edge of the cliff so he doesn't go near it again, Anderson explains. We forget how dangerous forests and swamps and cliffs are. She notes that watch out for the wolfman can act as a more effective stand-in for be careful. Or maybe the Appalachian Mountains have earned all the legends we've ascribed to them and more, since they've been around long enough to witness the development of most life on Earth. The shadows and rustles of forest are natural fodder for fear, especially if you're not used to them. But among those who know, the Appalachians are another beast entirely. In the Appalachians, with all the hollows and hollers and thickly wooded slopes, the little springs rising unexpectedly out of the dark holes and vanishing again, that's a landscape full of hidden things. That's a place where the devil can pace and strange lights can lead you astray, where you might see something that looks like a deer but doesn't move like a deer, says Vernon. It's fertile ground for fear, but people still have to live here, so we get stories about what to do when you meet the devil or the not deer, and the cautionary tales about what happened to people who didn't do the right things. As she adds, it's endlessly fertile ground for storytellers, that's for sure. Well, I hope that gets us off to a good start on this journey here. We stayed in the scariest motel in America is the title of our next story, and it's written by veteran travel writer Natalie B. Compton. It appeared in the October 31st, 2024 issue of the Washington Post. Now, to learn more, Ms. Compton traveled to Tonopah in the remote Nevada desert. She went there to investigate ghastly rumors and found the place littered with clowns and more. The parking lot of the Clown Motel was not empty. Even though it's a motel filled with clowns, even though it's next to a cemetery, even though it's allegedly haunted. Plenty of people come here despite the red flags. Nothing scares me, especially not clowns, a guest with a Colonel Sanders goatee told me near his room on the first floor. Behind him, a black door painted with fake blood. I'd think of him the next morning and wonder how he slept. Maybe, like me, he'd had a rough night. Hundreds of desert miles from any major city, Tonopah, population 2,200, roughly speaking, has become a modest tourist destination in the Nevada wilds for its mining history, stargazing, and ghost stories. Travelers staying over have plenty of clown-free options. There's the historic Mitzpah Hotel, allegedly haunted, and the Belvada Hotel, also allegedly haunted, and the Best Western. Free breakfast there. Then there's the Clown Motel near the edge of town, just off Main Street. Video producer Monica Rodman and I drove 4 hours from Las Vegas to find out whether the place lived up to its superlative, America's scariest motel. People say it's haunted. Well, unlike the Colonel, a lot of things scare me, and the motel was giving off weird vibes from the minute we arrived. The candy-striped base of its towering sign looked mangled by a car crash. Behind it, the squat two-story motel was rust-colored with mustard trim. The guest doors or room doors popped in shades of lime, cobalt, and bubblegum. Most were accessorized with clowns, fake blood, or polka dots. It was almost enough to distract you from the cemetery across the street. Now, the location wasn't an accident. In 1985, siblings Leona and Leroy David built the motel next to where their father was buried. To complete the homage, they displayed his 150-piece clown collection in its lobby, and the Clown Motel was born. Monica and I left the safety of our rental car to check in. A high desert chill set the mood, so did the life-size Ronald McDonald statue and caution sign near the entrance that read, "Museum has some haunted clowns." In the years since the motel opened, legend grew of the property's supernatural nature. Some guests claimed they saw ghosts coming from the cemetery or had clowns appear in their room. The reality TV show Ghost Adventures visited in a 2015 episode. People do say it's haunted, the motel's owner at the time, Bob Perchetti, told Zach Bagans. Might have a lot to do with the graveyard, he added. The episode made the motel famous in ghost hunting circles, and it attracted both YouTubers and clown doll donations from all over the world. The collection has grown so large that the motel's current owner is extending the building to make room for them all. In the parking lot, we met a young couple from Southern California, dressed all in black, one with a sweatshirt printed with a pentagram decal. They said their trip to Tonopah was 2 years in the making. Another young couple, both tall and blonde, were medical students from Vegas, stopping en route to Lake Tahoe. "We're ultra nerds for October and Halloween," said the guy, named Sean Paul Swenson. Clowns in every corner. Past the front desk and through the gift shop, the museum overflows with more clown paraphernalia. Thousands of dolls, statues, masks, paintings, Lego figures, wood carvings, and puppets hung from the ceiling were piled on shelves and were gathered near the floor. Friendly children's toys and demonic nightmare fuel alike. I noticed many were caked in dust. Well, Clown Motel CEO Hama Anand, who lives in on-site full-time, was behind the counter ringing up merch such as branded shot glasses, clothing, and postcards. Anand said finding this place was his destiny. He'd been looking for a motel for his family to buy when he came across Perchetti's listing. Anand had been collecting clowns since his childhood in New Delhi, India. He told his brother Vijay, who had already ran some motels in Vegas, that their search was over. Instead of trying to put lipstick on a pig, the brothers went whole hog with the motel's most off-putting elements. Its chaotic website welcomes potential guests to let fear run down your spine. Guests can rent an electromagnetic field radiation reader, also called an EMF. It's a tool people claim can detect spirits, and the motel offers also ghost hunt tours. Well, Anon painted the towering clowns fastened to the motel's facade, as well as hundreds of clown paintings for decoration and for purchase. They remodeled rooms, giving them spooky themes. There's one inspired by The Exorcist and a suite dedicated to Clownvis, a man who impersonates Elvis, but as a clown. Well, the cheapest rooms, no theme, start at $85, but during peak season, like near Halloween, the themed rooms can run more than $200. We had chosen room 108, designed after Stephen King's horror novel It. Online, we read that it was a particularly active room for paranormal activity, from the first crack of a door to a crackle that rang out in the dark. We had triggered a giant motion sensor skeleton head with flashing light eyes that was sitting on top of the closet. "Don't be afraid, I won't hurt you," its robot said. Robot voice said, rather. Well, the kish took the edge off, but the room was still unsettling. Next to one of the two queen beds was a floor-to-ceiling painting of Pennywise, the horrifying It clown. Everywhere you look were clown paintings and posters. Next to the sink, a tiny Pennywise T-shirt made for either a child or a dog was pinned to the wall. The room opened to the parking lot and the cemetery beyond. Ghost tours and ghastly rumors. Well, after dark, we gathered in the lobby for our ghost tour with a couple from Reno, Nevada, and a tall man who stayed silent. Our guide, Wanda Crisp, led us back to the corner of the museum to point out a few of notorious clowns in the collection. None moved in our presence, but that wasn't unusual to Crisp. "They're not performing animals," she said. Crisp wore a shimmering black dress with beaded skulls and carried an EMF reader. She told us that spirits tricked her by turning it off at random. In her 36 years living in Tonopah, she said, she had seen ghosts near the property, but never on it. One theory behind the area's alleged paranormal activity is a macabre rumor. Chris said the land where the Clown Motel's buildings and parking lot now stand used to be part of a cemetery. A huge flood unearthed bodies, she said, disturbing their final resting place. Well, the Tonopah Historic Mining Park Foundation told me another version of the legend, that was mine tailings, not a flood, could have disrupted the graves. Either way the tale goes, the unearthed bodies had to be reburied. Well, we followed Crisp into the gravel and dirt cemetery. It was cold, and Crisp donned a heavy black coat. They gave her an ominous shape in the shadow of her flashlight. She pointed out notable plots, such as that of George Devil Davis, the town's first black resident. His ghost was said to sit on the cemetery flagpole at night, and we stared at the American flag waving in the soft wind, but we didn't see him. Before we parted ways, Crisp asked us which room we'd booked. She smiled when we answered. "The vanity mirror in our room, she said, was a portal for spirits." Next, a nightmare on Main Street. With midnight approaching, Monica wanted to go back to the cemetery to do some B-roll film. Well, I wanted to just put the day behind us. Alone in the room, I couldn't decide what was worse, leaving the front door open to the parking lot for any axe murderer to walk in, or shutting it, tapping me with the clown spirits who might escape the portal when the coast was clear. Well, I compromised and left a crack in the door. Only once Mo returned did I go to the portal mirror to brush my teeth. I was too freaked out by the ghost stories and the plot of it in the shower. Well, our EMF reader hadn't picked up any activity by the time we got into bed. The room seemed dimmer than before. Mo and I debated whether the flickering light had always been so faint. Anon's clown stared down at us from every angle. I pulled a sweater over my eyes, put on my headphones, and fell asleep. A rattling woke me up. What time was it? I didn't want to open my eyes. Seeing any razor-toothed clowns, in artwork or otherwise, would be too much to handle in any groggy state. Well, I listened to the noise, a low rumbling grate. I tried to wake Mo, but they were out cold. The EMF reader was off. The grating had to be the fridge, some middle-of-the-night buzz we hadn't noticed before. I willed myself to believe this rational explanation, went back to bed to the soothing sound of Julia Child's memoir on audiobook. Sunrise came, and I told Mo about my bad sleep. Turns out they had experienced something worse, a nightmare about the room that we were in which something had pulled at their sheets like the ghost encounters other guests had reported. And it seemed so real. We packed up and went to the lobby to return our key and EMF reader to Anand, who was sitting in a lounge chair next to Crisp as they drank their morning coffee. She had changed her witchy wardrobe for a more comfortable look, no longer the ghost hunter, just a familiar face. We told them what had happened. Freddy Krueger isn't the only one who comes through dreams, Crisp said, referring to the plot of The Nightmare on Elm Street. Well, it was time to leave Tonopah. On our way out, I looked for the man with the goatee to ask him for his take. The parking lot was empty. Oh, my goodness. Some people have all the fun, don't they? Well, our next story, or I should say stories, comes from Bloom's Farmers and Planters Almanac for 2025. Now, this publication contains a variety of articles and stories for different months. We chose the one for October because it's got our attention. It's called America's Haunted Lighthouses. And spoiler alert, one's right here in North Carolina. Are you ready? Lighthouses are fascinating places, many of them with an intriguing history. These stoic beacons have a naturally ominous appearance, standing guard against the surreal backdrop. Lighthouses spark our imaginations as we wonder what life was like for the lighthouse keepers that loved and cared for them. Here we go. We start with St. Simon's Lighthouse, Georgia. Built in 1810, it was destroyed by Confederate forces in 1861. They destroyed the beacon so that it could not be used by federal forces during the Civil War. In 1872, the lighthouse and keeper's dwelling were built to replace the original lighthouse. One story tells us that in 1880, the lighthouse keeper was shot and killed by his assistant. Locals believe that his ghost is still there. Visitors have reported the appearance of his apparition as well as ghostly footprints. Then we move on to Point Lookout Lighthouse in Maryland. Visitors have reported plenty of paranormal activity concerning this lighthouse built in Scotland, Maryland in 1830, including the sound of footsteps and disembodied voices. Ghostly apparitions that appear and disappear have also been reported, as well as doors opening and closing on their own. Then we move on to Presque Isle Lighthouse, Michigan. Built in 1840, it was abandoned in 1871 after it had begun to deteriorate and a new lighthouse was built 1 mile north. In the early 1900s, a family called the Stevens fell in love with it and restored it. After the Stevens passed it on, the lighthouse was open to tourism. Another couple, Mr. and Mrs. Paris, began managing the property in the 1970s. Mr. Paris enjoyed giving tours and making children laugh. It is believed that the ghost of the jovial caretaker is still there. Members of the Coast Guard and the National Guard have reported seeing the light at the top of the lighthouse turn on. And now we move south to Tybee Island Lighthouse, Georgia. Though later rebuilt after becoming structurally unsound, the lighthouse was originally built in 1736. Tybee Island Lighthouse is a hot spot for paranormal activity. Visitors have reported footsteps, noises, whistling, and disembodied voices. Ghostly apparitions of past lighthouse keepers have also been reported, as well as a young girl who warns off visitors. So, we move on now to the Fairport Harbor Lighthouse in Ohio. Now, this lighthouse is home to much paranormal activity. Originally built in 1825, it was rebuilt in 1871 due to structural issues. It is believed to be haunted by the ghost of two previous lighthouse keepers, as well as the apparition of a gray cat. Then we have the White River Lighthouse. We go to Maine for that one. The first keeper of this lighthouse, built in 1875, was Captain Robinson. The captain and his wife loved the place. They raised their children there and continued to work there for 47 years. Captain Robinson finally decided to retire at the age of 87. However, he passed away the night before he was to leave. Visitors believe the captain and his wife may still reside there. Many people hear the sound of the captain's cane scuffling against the floor, and the ghost of his wife, Sarah, is reported to be tidying up after the staff. And then we have Hacienda Lighthouse, or Hacienda Head Lighthouse, I should say. It's in Oregon. Now, this was built in 1894. It stands 200 feet above the water. It is haunted by a friendly ghost known as Rue, or the Gray Lady. She keeps things tidy, and visitors have reported seeing her ghostly apparition in the window. The grave of an infant is on the lighthouse grounds, and locals believe it's Rue's baby, which is why she remains at the lighthouse. Now, Owl's Head Lighthouse is found in Maine. It's a beautiful site in a quiet community believed to be haunted, one of the ghosts being a dedicated groundskeeper who is still there performing his duties. Locals report mysterious footprints appearing in the snow and mud when no one has been in the vicinity. And finally, I told you, here's spoiler alert, Cape Hatteras Lighthouse, North Carolina. Well, construction began in 1799, but it wasn't lit until 1803. Now, this lighthouse stands 208 feet tall. It's the tallest lighthouse in the U.S. The lighthouse is reported to be haunted by one friendly ghost, a black and white cat that disappears when visitors try to pick it up. Now, these are just a few of the many magnificent and mysterious lighthouses. These structures are filled with beauty and intrigue and share rich histories. If you get the chance to visit a lighthouse or two, take the opportunity to explore and learn about these wonderful places. Many of them open to tourism and definitely all worth the visit. So there you go. An update on lighthouses, huh? How's that grab you? Well, we're going to now move over to something a little different here, and we're going to pick up with an interesting report here that came about earlier this week, I think it was, or a broadcast last week. Basically, it comes from a show that airs nightly on a lot of radio stations across the country, a syndicated program called Coast to Coast featuring George Norrie as the host. They do a lot of paranormal stuff on this show. And recently, they did a thing written by Tim Benall. That's about a spooky study, believe it or not. Yes, a study of spooky study, which determined that most haunted states, which are the most haunted states in America. Now, produced by the online gambling hub of casino.ca, the spine-tingling survey relied on the sizable Ghost of America sightings database combined with social media posts. The total number of collected reports was then compared to the population data to develop a ranking system, and that based on suspected spirit encounters across the country. So you can imagine what this is like. I can imagine only what they found. Meanwhile, and Georgia found itself at the bottom of the rankings with a mere 6 sightings per 100,000 people. And the study is not the first such attempt at ranking America's haunted states, as a similar project made headlines way back in 2023. That effort produced remarkably different results, with Texas, Maine, Florida, and North Dakota as the top locations for ghost encounters, just in case you're interested. And also at the bottom in the 2023 rankings, we have New Jersey, Arizona, Nevada, New York, and Maryland. And they were dueling studies, something of a testament to the what we would call the unpredictable nature of paranormal. Trying to codify the curious can often lead to more uncertainty and a lot more questions than answers, as we obviously are experiencing today. Well, how about that, huh? Quite an undertaking to keep up with all this haunted journey stuff. Hope you've enjoyed today's visitation here. And I just want to remind you that you've been listening to the Armchair Traveler, and we hope you've enjoyed today's episode and our yearly homage to Halloween, and that you'll be with us next week when we'll get back into more normal activity and normal travel. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you the content of the program is intended for people who are blind or print impaired. Now, Armchair Traveler is available as a podcast at our website, NC Reading Service. Service.org. Again, that address is ncreadingservice.org. Any comments or questions can be directed to 919-832-5138. That's 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.